Thank you all for being here. It's nice to see all those faces. How are you, man? Good to see you. See that lovely lady right there? She's one of my best friends. She ran the show in Delaware, and now she's down here. And Ashley got her master's like you told her to. She's doing great. Great to see you. Excuse, as we used to say in the Senate, that point of personal privilege. Hey, as you know, I spent a lot of time, along with Melody and the rest of the economic team, on the Recovery Act. And I learned a long time ago something I forgot momentarily. After we passed the Recovery Act, I came in, and I should have known better, Melanie. I have lunch with the president once a week with nothing on the agenda, and I came in with a big old thick memorandum saying, "Mr. President, I think this is how we should follow up on the Recovery Act." He looked at it and said, "Good, do it." You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. So don't ever write your boss a memo about how to proceed on something complicated. But here's my point. The point is that Melanie and I spent a lot of time talking about this middle-class task force, which is the first thing that the president set up when he got to the White House, because we want to make it clear to the American people that notwithstanding the fact that the economy is growing, and even if the economy were raging at 6 or 8% per quarter in the growth of the GDP, that's not the measure we're going to use when our term ends as to whether or not we think we are successful. The measure will be whether or not those people in the middle class are able to be sustained and stay in the middle class without clinging by their fingernails, and those aspiring in the middle class having an opportunity to get into the middle class. That really is, really, genuinely is the measure of what Melody and I and the President view as our goal and as our measure of success or failure. And the Recovery Act has been a great asset in helping us in many ways to deal with that progression. Some of you may know that between the years 2000 and 2007, productivity increased 20%, yet middle-class people lost their standing. They actually lost real net income during that period. And that's what we're attempting to turn around, as well as turn the economy we inherited around. And I think we're on our way to doing both of those. So I'm not complaining about having to do the Recovery Act. I can think of no better way to spend my time than squeezing every single solitary job out of the Recovery Act that we can possibly do out of the stimulus bill. And while this economy is still a long way to go to get back to where the President and I would like to see it, and where the vast majority of the American people would like to see it, the fact is there are certain facts that are undeniably clear. The economy is growing again. The last several quarters, we've been averaging over 4% growth. The projections are up. We created 500,000 jobs in the last 2 months, first time that's been done since 07. And the truth of the matter is that the Recovery Act is working. Just this last quarter on project jobs, jobs where you can directly say, the federal government wrote a check to an entity for a highway, a school, or whatever, and they have to list how many jobs. 680,000 jobs were created just by that. And that's the smallest, that's only one-fifth of the money that comes out of the Recovery Act. So things are going well, going much better, and there's very few people who doubt any longer that we've created somewhere, as the Council of Economic Advisers says, between 2.2 and 2.8 million jobs. And if you notice, you no longer hear people saying it's not working. They argue whether it's working well enough, it's fast enough, but nobody any longer is saying it's not working. So in the process, we're trying to build a new and stronger economy that's going to put us in a position not only lift up the middle class and maintain it, but actually so we can lead in the 21st century like we did in the 20th century. We can't just build it on the wreckage of the 20th century economy. We have to rebuild those elements of the economy that are working, but we have to provide new elements. We're also looking for innovation that's come out of this act. And so it's not an unusual thing to do here to insert a whole lot more data and talking points the economists like to use. But today we're in a very fortunate position. We have people sitting around this, this table who are going to be able to put faces to the numbers. Those numbers of additional people that have been employed, to talk to some of the folks who have taken advantage in the case of the state of New York and other states as to how to wisely use the money available through a fancy name, TANF, a program that is actually designed to help people hardest hit, the people who are in the most difficult positions, some of whom are on welfare, many of whom are not, but just sort of hanging on, clinging, to people who are actually benefited from the program, employers who benefited from the program. And so this is what we're about to talk about today is only one very small part of the Recovery Act, and quite frankly, a small part of this thing called TANF. It's not the totality of it. And it's had a real bang for the buck, and it's the reason I'm excited about it is one of the things we hope, Melanie and I hope would happen in the Recovery Act, is we would generate new ideas about how to deal with future employment needs. We'd have new ideas about how to spend government money wisely. I might add, I'm very proud to say that there's been virtually no, knock on wood, virtually no fraud that's been associated with this $787 billion program overall. As the president's always kidding me because I said, the dog hasn't barked yet. I'll go in and say, Joe, has the dog barked yet? The dog has not barked yet. But one of the things we want to do here is bigger than just digging us out of this god-awful hole we found ourselves in terms of the economy. And according to the most recent research, this particular job program we're going to talk about has placed 185,000 people, 185,000 people so far in jobs. You can count them. It's not like you have to guess what these are. You can count them because they're subsidized jobs out of this piece of legislation. And here's how this works. By the way, that 185 will be placed by September of this year. That's to be precise. And here's how it works. From this fund, states can decide, and it's up to them, totally up to the states, and we're going to hear from the state of New York in a minute, but states can decide to take the money available to them in this fund and use it for purposes that are job creating in ways that are innovative. And one of those ways is to take people jobs like the folks around this table, a couple who have benefited from this, they can place them in jobs that are companies for profit or nonprofit. And as far as eligibility of the program goes, we'll see in a moment, it's reaching a lot of people from very different walks of life. And I'm going to let them tell their stories in a minute, but there are other stories that we've heard about. My staff and Melanie's staff have been out interviewing an awful lot of people around the country. And, you know, there's a case, for example, where there's a guy who installs new windows and cars and homes, a small business. He hired a salesman under this piece of legislation to be able to pitch his business in a neighboring town. A market that could help him hire more people, increase his business. And now he's making inroads in a new customer base and hoping to keep that fella on and hire more people. There's a story about a woman who owns a small family daycare center, and she's brought in three new employees to work with the kids because she's convinced in her area the economy's recovering, it's about to pick up, and there's going to be a lot more folks coming to her for their children to be in daycare. And as all of you know in the audience, and these employers can tell you, one of the most difficult things to do when the economy is down is not only decide to hire a new employee, even though you see a market for their use, but the biggest part is training them. That's the cost. The front end is the training piece. Basically, and it's not a reflection on any employee, but it is the place where they're not producing anything and they're costing money. So there's a double hit here. You're going to take the chance of hiring a new employee, you think things are coming back. And are you going to be able to withstand the essential training, the first months of this process, to pay for the training, in effect, of this person? And so this woman has decided she's going to get ahead of the curve. She's essentially getting subsidized, training three new employees. So when she thinks as things roll in her community, she's going to be in good shape. Now, here's the deal. This program is scheduled to end on September the 30th. Now, this has been one of the surprises of the act. We didn't anticipate, I didn't, speak for myself, I didn't anticipate that the states would be as innovative as they were in essentially going out and getting people off of unemployment rolls and off of welfare rolls, putting them into jobs that pay them a salary that is a livable wage, and train them so that they can either stay there or go somewhere else. We all know. What's the one thing any of you in the audience have told anyone you know who's thinking about quitting a job they don't like before they have another job? Bad thing to do, right? In a good economy, it's a bad thing to do. People hire people from jobs. You want to be in a job to get a job. And so one of the benefits of this program also is there's another 185,000 people who are better positioned, not just to stay where they are now, but to go on another work. We're going to hear about that from Tamara, who is about to be made the managing partner of a major law firm. I'm only kidding, Tamara. But, see, but I said that to her, and she looked at me like before, oh, Joe, don't say that to me. But look, as I said, this program's scheduled to be terminated on the 30th. And we think that this innovative way in which the states have responded, it would be just a shame, particularly this economy, to see this program come to an end. And so we've been trying to extend this program, and it's a small program relative terms, with a big bang for the buck. We've been trying to extend this program as part of our overall jobs agenda. We realize now that more and more states are setting up these programs, and it would be a huge mistake to stop the momentum. And this is a good, successful program, and to plan to stop it now would be a serious mistake, in my view. This program is doing good things. It's giving people opportunities to find jobs from a job, as I said, teaching skills, as I referenced before, allowing businesses to train new employees, which is the biggest decision they got to make in terms of loss of income, in a sense, at the front end of this. And it seems to me there's no reason why we should stop it now. With unemployment rates still higher than any of us want, especially for the least advantaged among us, and these are the people who most qualify, most benefit, in my view, from this program to begin with, it would make more sense to keep it going. To send folks back to the unemployment rolls or back to welfare rolls seemed to me to be a counterproductive way in which to move. And by the way, just generically, we want to get people off of welfare rolls, and we want people off of unemployment rolls. We want people back doing jobs. And by the way, 95% of the people in both those circumstances, 99%, they want to work. They want to work. And so thanks to some good work by our friends up on Capitol Hill, this job extension, the subsidized job extension program, it is in the jobs bill in both the chambers, and they're working on it as we speak. It's an important bill that the President and I and the whole team strongly supports. And like I said, we're very happy to see job creation of over 500,000 jobs in the last 2 months alone. Melanie would tell you we were in a economic daily briefing on the economy, and I went out and said, I'm telling you, we're going to create more than 250,000 jobs in 1 month. And the whole team went, oh, my God, what's he saying? I was wrong. We created 282,000 jobs. Things are moving. Things are moving. But if you're unemployed, it's still a depression. My grandpa used to have an expression. He was from Scranton, Pennsylvania. When the guy in Oliphant, which is north of Scranton, is out of work, he'd say it's an economic slowdown. When your brother-in-law is out of work, it's a recession. When you're out of work, it's a depression. It's a depression for millions of Americans. And so this bill, as I said, we strongly support, and until the job market gets a whole lot stronger than it is now. And by the way, I would argue even with a strong job market, moving people off of welfare rolls into jobs that are needed to be placed is a positive thing under any circumstances. So if we can extend this program that we're going to discuss today, along with other aspects of the jobs bill, a lot more folks will be hearing about what the President has said that are the only words that really matter. Congratulations, you're hired. congratulations, you're hired. They're the only, only words that matter to well over 8 million people who lost their jobs because of this recession, on top of the ones who already were unemployed. So I urge my friends in Congress, and this is a member for the press and anything else, to pass, it's called H.R. 4213, to build on the progress we're making and to help put more Americans back to work. Because as you're about to hear, this program is helping real Americans find real jobs. It's helping real employers meet real needs at a time when things are very tough. And that's been our priority from day one. So, I'd now like to turn this over to Melody Barnes, the director of our Domestic Policy Council, a great colleague, an old friend of mine, and a longtime fighter for good programs like this. Melody, the floor is yours.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Vice President, and thank you to the Middle Class Task Force for taking this on from the beginning and pursuing these issues doggedly to make sure that they're at the forefront of the national conversation. Now, at the top of your comments, you were talking about the conversations we've had about the Recovery Act and about jobs, and I can just tell everyone here that is no exaggeration. We've had many, many conversations in the Oval Office, in the Roosevelt Room, because you and the President have made it very, very clear that job creation is the top priority for the country. And that's why we so strongly believe in this particular program, because it's doing exactly that, and it's doing it all over the place. It's doing it in big cities, and we're really looking forward to hearing from the people who are on the panel today, because we're talking about big cities, you know, Los Angeles, small towns in Mississippi and Florida, urban, rural, this is taking hold and it's doing a really wonderful job. And that's why we have to make sure that Congress moves forward and passes this legislation. But there are two things that I just want to point out that I think are critical. One, that this program is helping small businesses. And we're talking about businesses that don't have the reserves and the assets of larger corporations, reserves that they can dip into, even as everyone has been struggling, but that they can dip into during this economic downturn to do the kind of training that you were talking about, training that's so critical. And as we were talking about before coming in here, and I know we'll get into the conversation in a few moments, the kind of training that people wouldn't necessarily invest in unless they knew they were going to keep people on board. So this is allowing us, as our economy is starting to recover, for employers to make the kind of investment in employees to keep bring them into jobs and to keep them in those jobs as we start to build our economy and rebuild our economy. The second thing is that this is so important to individuals and families, and I think in particular to individuals and to families that have children, have small children. We know that the kinds of struggles, we've heard it, the President reads those 10 letters every day. Mr. Vice President, you've been all over the country talking to people. We know what people are confronting on the front line, so that we're able to have a program and hopefully extend a program that's making those lives easier, allowing children to see their parents go to work every day, those parents to provide for their families, not to depend on the kinds of social safety nets that are critical, but to save money by going to work, getting a paycheck, paying taxes, and feeling like they are responsible and active members of their community. Those two things are critical, and that's why we have to make sure that this program is extended, and we're hoping and encouraging Congress to do that. And the last thing I would just say, and you speak to it so eloquently and powerfully all the time, this is about making sure that people who are in the middle class can stay in the middle class, and people who are just grasping that bottom rung of the ladder can hold on to it and can climb the rest of the way through the ladder. That has been our focus and a priority for us from the beginning. That's why this program is so essential, and that's why I'm so pleased to talk to all of you before we walked in this room, and I'm excited about the fact that our audience is going to hear from you right now. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Maybe the way to proceed is, let me do a brief introduction of each of you, and then I'll go start with you, Kyle. But Kyle has a family-owned manufacturing business, and he's going to tell you about how this program is, he's taken advantage of it and impacted on it. And Jim Sheedy is to my left here. Jim was unemployed before he got a job through this program, but he still had children and a father-in-law to take care of. I'd like Jim to talk a little about it. And Tamara Washington is, she got a job through this program, has since moved on, left the program, moved on to a new company in unsubsidized employment, like I said, and I expect her to be a managing partner soon. And Eric Mikowitz runs a green home improvement company. He's adding more workers even during this recession, and he's going to talk about how this has impacted on him. And Barbara Gwynn is a is from New York State. She has been working with employers and employees across New York State and put to work I think a couple thousand folks under this program. And I might add that under this this act, each state of the 32 states can set their own individual regulations of who qualifies and how they qualify and how the subsidies work, et cetera. And so, but Barbara's one of the most successful programs. We're happy she was willing to come down and talk to us. So why don't I think this is the order, turn it over to you, Kyle, and tell us a little bit about your business and tell us a little bit about how this program is useful to you or not. I mean, tell us what the short sides of it, if there are any.
Well, first of all, it is a great honor to be here, to meet you guys, and to see what the government is doing for small businesses. I'll be honest.
You can tell Kyle's not from Maine.
Being a small business, you know, you feel like you get overlooked quite a bit, but this program is actually one that has greatly helped us.
Tell us about your business for just a second. What's the nature of your business?
We are a small family-owned manufacturing business, a machine shop, basically. Build any type of metal parts for automotive, military, any type of industrial applications. In that, it is a very skilled profession. So what this program is allowing us to do is it's allowing us to hire people that normally takes a six-month training process, and the government's helping us to train those people, so it's allowing us to do that expansion, is what you were referring to earlier, to not have that burden on us. As an owner, and most owners of businesses will know this, you know, before this program started, you know, I could work any 18 hours of any day, 7 days a week. With this program, it allows me to hire additional people to take some of that burden off of myself, to train them so that I can have a little bit of family time, and so that also it will help the employees as well with their family, and also to continue on, because as you were talking about the extension of it, you know, we didn't come into this saying we're going to hire you for 6 months, do all this training, and then say thank you very much. You know, our plan and our goal is to keep the three people that we've hired, which three people doesn't sound like a lot, but when that's 25% of your workforce, you know, you're continuing that growth, and that growth needs to continue. So that's what we're looking forward to.
Well, Kyle, if I can raise and jump in, Melody, in any of this. One of the things is I've gone in now, Melody's gone a lot with me as well. I've gone into, I think, 60 cities where I go in and Recovery Act issues, and afterwards, after we do whatever the event is, I go to the local diner or restaurant, big cities, small cities, and they have this colloquial phrase, you know, have a cup of Joe with Joe. And we sit around and we have people like y'all come in and sit down. And there's people are picked ahead of time, but everybody in the restaurant, everybody in the diner can come and the press watches it. And we talk about what's going on. Here's a story I hear from small employers like you. They say, look, Joe, I had a good thriving business. When the economy tanked, I found myself, like everybody else, in real trouble. Unable to borrow any money from the small bank I used to deal with. They're not lending anything right now. I've never missed a payment. I own my shop, or I don't have much of a mortgage on the place where the business I own, yet I can't get any loans. And so we saw this phenomenon. We saw this phenomenon that the Council of Economic Advisors showed, is we had like, you know, four, and I'm going to ask Jared Bernstein, my chief economist, to correct me if I'm wrong. We saw quarter after quarter where productivity kept going up, but people weren't hiring new people. And you said something interesting. productivity went up because you went out there, couldn't get the money to borrow to expand, couldn't take the chance on that, wasn't anything you could leverage, and so you worked 18-hour days, and that meant that it wasn't so you were willing to do that, but you didn't go hire somebody. Usually, when a recovery starts, what happens is, and productivity goes up, it means more people are being hired. So, on a larger question is, were you having, how accessible was capital for you to borrow to go out and take the chance to borrow the money to train these folks that you're hiring?
Impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
And so, okay, but that, you know, Jim, you were, how long were you unemployed, Jim?
15 months.
15 months, God love you. And okay, tell me about how this opportunity with Kyle's outfit came along. And again, these are skilled positions. We're talking about people who these are skilled jobs that are that require real training. Tell me about how you got into this, Jim, and how it's affected you.
Well, the program has helped quite a bit. I was unemployed for 15 months. I went from having what I thought was a very secure job working for the oil industry, no pun intended on that, but yeah. we did a lot of work. I thought it was a very secure job, and 24 years later, I walked into work on a Friday and I was unemployed. I never thought it would take 15 months to find another job. You have a lot of experience, management, supervision, different types of work. Right now out there, it's very difficult to find a job. With the improvement of the economy, even slightly, it's still almost impossible to find a job, especially from the area that we live in. In Florida and Washington and Holmes County is a very, I guess you could say, depressed area. There is not a lot of work around there. If you go to the area of Panama City Beach, they do have some jobs that are available, but it's mostly summertime workforce where they'll hire for restaurants, and then at the end of the year, you're back unemployed. Well, I don't want that. I have my wife, I have three kids, father-in-law lives with us, and unemployment wasn't the answer. It's not going to make you, I thank God for having some reserve in the back to make it through that time, because it was really difficult. I stumbled on this program. I didn't know anything about it. I went into Workforce Center talking to the people, and they asked me to see if I'd qualify for the program. Well, I did. And it was a week later, I was working for Kyle, and I thank God for it. I really do.
Well, you know, my dad used to have an expression, a job is about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about dignity.
Absolutely.
It's about respect.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad you got a chance to get back in the game here.
Mr. President, can I just ask Jim a question? I mean, you were talking about dignity and respect, and, you know, that's priceless. Mm-hmm. And there are also the skills. I mean, 24 years of the work that you had been doing, but then 15 months of not being employed. I know one of the things we're always concerned about is the fact that people start to worry about losing some of their skills during that period. And
yeah.
I was wondering if you had those concerns and then what this has now meant to you in those terms.
I think in the skills area that I wasn't concerned about losing them so much as to what I did. I was more concerned about trying to convince somebody that you know this stuff, because there is such a variety of people for them to look at. Mm-hmm. There are so many people in that area, and Kyle knows it, that is unemployed. But for you to go into a place and try to make yourself the best person, mm-hmm, is not always the easiest task. But through this program and qualifying for it, they will help you. If you can get hired, you can prove yourself at that point with the program. And that's what makes a difference. You'll have that opportunity to prove what you can do.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Tamara, tell us about, you got to press that little red button there. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Tell us a little about how you got acquainted with this program and to it and through it.
Well, I was unemployed for about 2 years. I was a customer relations manager for a company called Hunter Douglas. And the
Hunter Douglas fans and all that.
Yeah, and blinds and everything.
Yep.
And one day, they came in and they said, we're closing down the Los Angeles office. So, of course, my whole world came crumbling down, but I thought, it shouldn't be. It should be easy to get another job. So I went back. I found that I was having a child. So that was another obstacle. So I went, interviewed, sent my resume out to millions of people, and it just seemed like nothing was working. So I went back to school, thinking that that would make it easier for me to find a job. Graduated, still no luck. Unemployment insurance did run out after my 10,000 extension. It ran out, and I found myself on welfare. So about a month after I applied for welfare, the program was brought to my attention, and of course I jumped on it. You can help me find a job? Oh, that's wonderful, because this is not working for me or my son at that time. So I went through the program, and I was employed by a company by the name of VQ, which helped so much. It helped me. I'm not homeless. I end up obtaining a job that is unsubsidized through the subsidized program.
But tell me how that works. So you got to, what was the name of the company that had the
VQ.
VQ, USA. And you got through that through the city or the county welfare department told you that this program is available.
Yes, and then went through Marina Del Rey WorkSource Center,
yep,
which they are fantastic. They are really fantastic, and they placed me there. And the company that I worked for was a new company, so I learned a whole lot of different skills there as well. And also the Workforce Center, they were adamant about finding me permanent employment before the subsidized ended. So they did. They sent me on multiple interviews, and I end up interviewing for the company that I'm with now. And I'm permanent. I have full benefits. I'm able to take care of my son the right way, not half-stepping, you know. And it's really a blessing, because from where I came from, through that downtime, like you said, depression, yeah, I don't want to cry, but it helped me a lot to where I'm able to take care of my son in the way that I'm supposed to.
So good for you, Kim.
I appreciate it.
Good for you. We appreciate your and thank you for being here. It's hard to talk about.
It's okay.
Eric, tell us about your business and what the deal is.
Okay. My business is a company called Huff & Puff. We are a green home improvement company. We install energy efficient Renewal by Andersen replacement windows and doors. We serve all of upstate New York. We also install gutters as well. And we have about 50 people within our company. We've been a high growth company. In the 2000s, we've grown about 530%. Through, I'd say, the mid-2000s, we made Inc. Magazine's list of fastest-growing companies in the country. And when the recession hit in 2009, it really put the brakes on everything. Our customers are homeowners. And through the economic downturn, 401k shrunk. People they thought twice before making any kind of buying decision. And the credit markets dried up, which our industry is linked very heavily to. So it was kind of a devastating.
Explain for the cameras why you're linked. I know why. Why you're linked to the credit markets, why that's important for your business.
We're linked to the credit markets because homeowners typically take on loans for projects like what we do. You know, the average.
For home improvement.
For home
energy. In this case, energy.
Home improvements, energy efficiency, right. Replacement window, door projects.
Right.
Typically run anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000, could go anywhere to $30,000 to $50,000 depending on the size of the project.
Right.
So people in a lot of cases take loans either through our business, and we use a lot of top financing organizations in the country. And people also use home equity loans for to fund the
and
project.
They just absolutely
home equity went away.
Went away.
Right. I mean, it became impossible for people to get these loans. Banks wouldn't fund them. People had already taken too much equity out of their homes. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the banks were willing to lend money when nobody needed it, but now people need the money and nobody wants to give it out. So it's really made it very difficult for our industry, the whole financing aspect of things. And things are starting to loosen up. They get a little bit looser, and then they get a little bit tighter, and they get, so we try to ride through that. But kind of this 1-2 punch, everything slowing down, forced us to, you know, deal with some challenges. Those challenges being, number one, it cost us double what it cost previously to generate business, whether it's new leads, whether it's convincing customers to purchase these energy efficient home improvement upgrades. That's been very difficult. It's increased our cost. There's been certain economic incentives that have gone away through the state. You know, and also we ran into kind of a unique problem this go around, is that we've actually identified a lot of good people that are looking for jobs nowadays, but they're choosing to stay on unemployment sometimes because they feel a little more secure in that environment, maybe, rather than going out and taking on a new role. So one area where the Green Jobs program has really helped us is that we put together a new marketing program this year to focus on proximity marketing, bringing teams of people out and educating people on our programs. Where are we going to find people to staff this? Our marketing director hooked up with the Green Jobs program in Schenectady. We went through a vetting process and they approved it. And through that, we've tapped into a great resource, a great pool of people who are ready and willing to work. Come to work on day one. They're good people. They work hard. They try hard. And the subsidies that we get have been a big help in training people, because sometimes the people don't have the skills that of people that we would normally hire, but the subsidy makes up for that. And the other nice thing that the subsidy does is it lightens the overall burden that we have on small business that Kyle mentioned earlier. I mean, it's very difficult operating a small business in these times, and the funding actually really kind of helps lighten that burden up. It enables us to create a new revenue profit generating line of business that we intend to, you know, use as a staple in our company for years to come going forward.
Mm-hmm. So the people you've hired on through this subsidized program, what are they typically doing? What do you have them doing?
Typically, they're educating homeowners. They'll go into neighborhoods. We term it proximity marketing. Right. So they'll knock on doors. They won't sell door to door. They just knock on doors. They'll hand out information on our products. They'll work trade shows. They'll work events. Right.
Because what I want people to understand is you used to be able to do this by a different vehicle and a different method. I mean, when you had homeowners looking to shave energy costs, when they could go in and get a second mortgage and they could borrow against their home, they were improving the value of their home. Mm-hmm. When the bottom fell out of that, when some of them found themselves upside down through no fault of their own, that didn't happen. But along came, we put in the Recovery Act about $100 billion in energy-related things. And so now the thing we're finding is that innovative guys like you and companies like yours are doing is that people, I assume you have someone going in and saying, look, if you are prepared to invest in new weatherization here, doors, windows, you can get a subsidy from the government. There is a program here. And so in a sense, what we intended to do through the Recovery Act is let people do what they wanted to do, need to do in the interest of the country for them to do, and that is consume less energy by more efficient products, but through a different means in this case, by they're not able to go the home equity route. So I assume your folks doing proximity stuff are not necessarily out saying, come buy my, you know, windows.
Right.
But if you were in the market to be able to, this is what you can qualify for, and we're ready to do it for you. Is that kind of it?
That's right. You know, the more proximity marketing approach is kind of a more direct approach to educating homeowners.
Right.
And a big part of that education process is the tax credit. The $1,500 federal tax credit has been a huge success for our industry. It's been a big help for our company, and that's really what we lead with when we knock on people's doors is, you know, did you know that there is a tax credit available for these projects? And we just hope that tax credit is extended through 2011.
We are going to do everything in our power to see that done. That is sort of our baby.
If you need my help, I'm there because.
Well, you know, by the way, it literally the single biggest energy saving that could possibly happen could account for 40% if we just were to weatherize all the buildings and homes in America. I mean, it is gigantic, the payback, and for the environment. Barbara, tell us about when you guys came up with that idea, how New York State was going to use the money that was available.
In New York, we were absolutely pleased to have the opportunity to tap into the TANF emergency contingency funds to create jobs. It's something that we know, given the state's current economic situation, that it's something that we certainly would not have been able to afford without the enhanced federal support. So we, again, the program does exactly what it was intended to do, and in government that doesn't always turn out that way. So we're creating jobs, and we've created, we have focused our programs primarily on individuals who have been receiving public assistance or other individuals that may have barriers to employment. Perhaps they have, criminal backgrounds, but certainly we're focusing on parents. We've created, one of our programs is the Green Program, the Green Jobs Program, because also consistent with the president's agenda, our governor also is very interested in making sure that we can do everything we can do to conserve energy and to help families save energy. So through the Green Jobs Program, we're targeting positions that are being created in that sector. We also have one program that is targeting the healthcare industry. Again, it's an industry that actually has continued to hire, but we often find that people, there's a lot of turnover, so we're trying to target it in a way that people can get into positions and also be in a place where they're able to access additional training so that they can move up within the industry and retain their jobs. And then we have a third program, again, newly created, that we refer to as the Transitional Jobs Program. Again, targeting primarily people who have been on public assistance. And it's really intended to provide both the job and then also along with that to make sure that people are getting education and training or some type of a skill development activity at the same time during the subsidy period, again, so that they can hopefully, move beyond the entry-level job and hopefully achieve, what everyone wants, which is the middle class.
And how many folks have you placed through?
So far, we have about 2,300 individuals who have been placed directly as a result of this program.
Now, I don't think you'll have the answer to this. I asked the economists and my team this question because every state does this a different way. And 32 states are now participating in this program in an innovative way. Some will allow subsidies up to 100%. Some are 80%. Some relate to if you're employed for the first month, you get 100%, and the last, whatever, it's 80, so on. But one of the things that I'm going to be coming back, I warn you, to ask you about, I don't expect you to the answer now, I'm going to be asking all 32 directors in the 32 states, is give us a sense of, you pointed out, you're focusing on, for both substantive reasons and economic reasons, they're hard to distinguish those two, but people who are on public assistance. Mm-hmm. One, because you want to give them a tool, mm-hmm. and two, it also saves money.
Correct.
So one of the things I'm looking to before we wrap this, wrap up the Recovery Act program, is I want to be able to demonstrate, if the facts demonstrate this, that the number of people who were taken off of unemployment, the number of dollars saved people taking off of direct payments is a sizable number. And I'm betting that the money we've invested to subsidize is a pretty cheap dollar when you're going to balance it against the money not being spent by the government on a welfare subsidy necessarily, and not being spent on an unemployment check necessarily. If you add all that up, I'm curious at the end of the day, how that balances against the total amount of money spent right. in this program, and whether or not it is, even if it's, 2 to 1, I mean, twice as much spent as saved, it still would be a gigantic savings because people are getting skills and
Absolutely.
They're getting jobs. Mm-hmm. But so we have no authority to make this make work for you, but I'm going to be asking you if you would give us, along with your colleagues around the country, some sense of, if you can calibrate, and by the way, under the federal laws, we are not allowed to demand the states give us information directly on the welfare payments that they are making, but and clearly not the people or names. I'm not looking for any of that. Mm-hmm. But can you give me a gut about how you think, how much, not in dollars, but maybe percentage, how much money the state's saving through not having to pay the direct payment? That is, I mean,
right, and I definitely don't have that information.
Yeah, no,
with me,
I wouldn't expect you would. I just want to get a sense of talking.
There's no
about
question.
It.
Again, we are certainly targeting our programs, and if they're not receiving public assistance or perhaps unemployment insurance, they're all needy parents, and so certainly there is an offsetting savings there in terms of not needing to pay out public benefits. But I think, you know, more importantly, even beyond the immediate savings than that end, is that it provides the choice for the parents that they should have. I mean, just like you heard from Mrs. Washington, I mean, she should have the opportunity to support her child with a paycheck rather than a government check. So I think that, you know, that also will hopefully produce even longer term savings and makes, you know, significant differences in families' lives.
My daughter, the social worker, would be offended by the fact I asked the monetary question. I want you to know I do understand that there is a significant larger payoff in terms of the public good and the opportunity for individuals.
You're making sure you can go home.
Yes, that's right. But you think I'm kidding. I'll have to explain that, as Carrie could tell you. I'd have to explain it to her. But the reason I say it is, some who are cynical about this effort that we are making, you are making, and I think very successfully, I just think it's helpful to also have a bottom line, not the total answer, but the bottom line number, so people know this is the alternative is someone not able to care for their family, someone in a position where they lose their sense of who they are, someone who is requiring, at least through a welfare payment and or an unemployment check, a government check to be written, which they don't want anyway. They'd rather have a job. But it is, I think this is an important program. And Melanie and I are up in the Hill trying to talk to my former colleagues and people who know her so well from the years she ran Senator Kennedy's operation, and we're making our case. Did you want to add anything?
I do. Two questions, and one for Director Gwynne. Tell us about the response from employers, from businesses, having placed 2,000 people. What is the general response from the business community?
Overall, I would say definitely very positive. I mean, as you've heard, it's helping companies either keep their doors open or hopefully grow and expand their business through being able to kind of take a chance at a time when there's a lot of economic uncertainty. We did hear from some of our county-administered programs that initially where they were trying to do something new. I mean, not everyone's done this in the past when you talk about the world of public assistance programs. So this was something new for them to have job developers going out to employers and trying to create jobs. Initially, we did hear some feedback that there was a little bit of skepticism of, you know, the government and not necessarily wanting to get involved with anything that was government-related. But I think after people were able to both demonstrate through success, you know, through having being able to refer someone who is qualified or, you know, at least is work ready and that they can demonstrate will show up and be supportive and a positive impact on their business. So it kind of takes one to make a difference and for people to see that it's something that can work.
That's great. And I guess to our two business owners who are here, when you look down the road and think about the growth of your business, what do you see in terms of the way that this program has impacted it? And particularly, you know, Eric, we were talking about this program and talking about the tax credit. And I imagine kind of that door-to-door kind of retail engagement with people who maybe they aren't deciding to go through weatherization right now, but you've educated a whole population of people and what that might mean to the growth of your business and Kyle, to your business down the road.
Yes, absolutely. we, you know, this program long-term is obviously, we look at this as a pool of people that we'll continually draw from, that we continually invest in training people so that they can stay on for the long-term. That approach of going door-to-door, educating people on the benefits of doing these things is a program that will stay in the company for years to come as a revenue profit center within the company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hope that this program is an important part of that.
And having gone to school in Syracuse, New York, I understand weatherization needs.
Yes, you do. Yeah. It is a cold place.
Just as Eric said, you know, as an employer, the training process is the most expensive process of hiring a new employee. So therefore, having that training taken care of, basically, it allows us to have that additional workforce to continue on. I mean, before the downturn of the economy, we had 40, 45 employees. You know, with the economy turning down the way it did, you know, we went all the way down to 9 employees. You know, we were one of those hanging on by their fingernails trying to hold on without closing the doors. So this program allows us to retrain the new workforce, because in a machine shop, the jobs are always changing. The jobs that we lost are not the jobs we're getting back. It's new jobs, so it's additional training. It's a whole new process, basically. So it allows us to train that workforce. And the intent is to continue to grow, because when you have 9, now you have 12 in the shop, you know, the next guy you hire, you've got additional people that can show that person. So for us, each additional person we hire, the training cost goes down. So by increasing by 25%, the next person that we hire will cost less to do that training.
That's terrific. And being able to hire people like Tamara and Jim, I mean, I think for any employer, it just tells you about the quality and the importance of this mm-hmm. particular program.
Would any of you like to make any closing comments? Anything we didn't raise that you think we should be raised, or any criticism of the program, how it could work better? I mean, we set out early on in this program, not this program, the entire Recovery Act, the Middle Class Task Force, is we not only want to know what's working, we want to know what's not working, how we can improve things, because we can always improve. Is there any, so don't be afraid to give me a constructive criticism of the program.
I mean, just on behalf of New York State, we thank you for your interest in this program and for your efforts to try to get things to move forward. And, you know, certainly we'll do whatever we can also in terms of lobbying or trying to convince Congress that it is a good investment. I mean, we truly believe it is. And as I said, it's made a huge difference. It certainly is directly creating jobs for people and making a difference. So thank you.
I mean, I'd like to say on behalf of Huff and Puff as a small business, you know, we like to say that we work hard to make home improvements affordable and easy for our customers. And in these times, we're working harder than ever, you know, to try to do that and to try to stay profitable and be successful. I don't know the exact statistics, but I know small business contributes an enormous amount to the economy and any support. 70% of new jobs. So I know, at least in my community, I'm very involved with a lot of other business owners, and I know anything that can be done to help small business, whether it's through tax credits, programs like this, tax incentives, they're very much appreciated and well used. I assure you that.
They're very much needed. Anyone else have anything you want to say?
I was just going to add that in Holmes County, being a very rural area, that just this program alone has decreased the unemployment by 0.3%. 0.3% is not... Doesn't sound like a whole
hey,
lot.
Hey, where we sit, that's a big deal. We could do 0.3% a month, we'd be in great shape. I think
so
that's
it. So in that aspect, it has been a great success.
Thank you. Jim, you have anything you want to close with? You don't have to.
I would just like to say that I believe from someone that's been out there walking and trenching through and looking for jobs that the program will work very well. I think that if more people would get involved in it, more states, I think that it could be a success across the country.
Thank you. And Tamara, when you're running the law firm, you're going to remember me? Huh?
Of
course.
I'm so happy for you, kid. I really am. Well, folks, thank you for being here. We're going to hope our colleagues keep this in the legislation we have up there. And small business is the engine. Small business, and that's why we have invested so much in tax credits, direct job credits, this program. And this has been the sleeper program. This has been the surprise. We were hopeful, but be honest with you, at least speaking for myself, I didn't expect this particular application to have the kind of impact it's had. So there's some real good news. Well, thank you all very much. Appreciate it. And thank you all for taking time to be here.